Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and another of our big name exclusive interviews. Over the course of the next hour, that famous England bowling partnership from the early 2000s that reunites as Steve Harmison sits down with his old teammate Matthew Hoggard to discuss the twists and turns of a successful career in the game. For more content like this, as well as match highlights and in-depth analysis, you can subscribe to the following on podcast, which is available on Apple Podcasts, Acast and Spotify. But for now, you're listening to Steve Harmison in conversation with Matthew Hoggard.
So, Hog, thanks for letting us delve into the life and the mind of Matthew Hoggard. I did say to TalkSport that this could be an interesting hour trying to get into the mind of Hoggy, but I think I know your life inside out, and I've heard your after-dinner stuff and stuff like that, but your entry into the game of cricket was a bit late. It wasn't the conventional way. You didn't play much representative cricket for Yorkshire as young Yorkshire, and you sort of fell into it by chance, really, didn't you?
Yeah, I've got to say, I didn't start playing for Yorkshire until I was 18. I thought my chance of playing professional cricket had gone because I kept on getting overlooked for all the Yorkshire representative side. So I was taking A-levels, so I wanted to be a vet. You know, I'm like, I love my animals.
No, you love your animals. Some would argue you're borderline human and animal.
I think I get more sense out of animals than I do with a lot of my colleagues or ex-colleagues. No exceptions spared, Stephen. My next love was wanted to be a vet. So I was doing A-levels, and Phil Carrick came to Pudsey-Kongs and to take over as captain. And he took one look at me playing third team cricket, which I was at the time for Pudsey-Kongs. And he moved me from the third team up into the first team, which was full of Yorkshire second team players. And he sent me off to South Africa, and I played club cricket in Joburg for a team called the Pirates. And again, I opened the bowling with Stephen Jack, who played cricket in South Africa. There was Stefan Jacobs, who's currently the Transvaal all-rounder. We had Neil Fewsdale, who was a spinner who played for Transvaal at the time. So it was a brilliant team, and I learned so much about cricket and myself. And when I came back, Phil Carrick had badgered Steve Oldham to give me a trial at Yorkshire, and I managed to get onto the books.
You talk about getting a trial at Yorkshire. First of all, it wasn't easy getting a trial at Yorkshire, but then when you got the trial, there were some bowlers in that Yorkshire lineup as well as what was in reserve.
Yeah, I can remember maybe my second year or third year into my career, I had a meeting with Bill Athey. And it was a case of the opening the bowling was Darren Goff and Chris Silverwood with Jack Hartley. We had Warfy, we had Sidebottom, we had Gavin Hamilton, we had Paul Hutchison. There were so many people above me, and we had maybe seven steamers that all played for England or were capable of playing for England at the time. It was a case of, can you go play? Do you want to come to Worcester? And half of me really did want to go to Worcester and be guaranteed a first-team place. And the other half of me wanted to kick the old boys out of Yorkshire and said, you know, I'm Yorkshire through and through. I want to play for Yorkshire and I want to kick people out. And I backed myself that I'm good enough that I stayed. And that old cliche, the rest is history, sort of malarkey, but the rest is history.
And the people you went into that side with, you know, the friendship that you had, the likes of Silverwood and even our very own TalkSport's Darren Goff. What was Goffy like to play with early doors? You youngster coming into the dressing room. I played with some, you know, good characters at Durham, but nobody is larger than life or hero status of what Goffy is as a young whippersnapper coming into the dressing room.
Yeah, I just missed Craig White out there. Very important. Yeah. Cog and part of Yorkshire.
If you tell Goffy he was the fastest one, Goffy wasn't very happy with that.
No, he was. And I'll tell you a story about that after I've told you how good Goffy was. Goffy was awesome. You know exactly what you're getting with Goffy because he told you.
If you weren't listening, he told you again.
Get it? There was nothing quiet about Darren Goff. There was no BS about Goffy. He talked about himself a lot. He had a lot of self-belief. But you know that if the going got tough, he'd be the first person in the dressing room to stick up his hand and say, right, then I want to do them hard yards. Mm. And he'd also be the person that if somebody was having a tough time, that would go around and put his arm around them. Mm. So he's a legend. And he was a massive influence in my career, watching him on the TV, thinking, you know, I want to be like him. Mm. And he is larger than life, as you say, and he is a character. And on the quickest bowler, Craig White was definitely quicker than Goff. It was in the early days of my Yorkshire, and we had light blue kit, Sunday League kit, with yellow writing. It said Yorkshire on the front. And I was 12th man. And I was asked to take the baseball mitt onto the and say, right, can you take the bowlers? And I was carking myself, to be fair, because I wasn't very good with this mitt. These balls were coming quite fast. And in Sunday League, there were still allowed crowds on the pitch.
Yeah.
So everybody gathered around the square. People were behind me. And I was keeping to Silverwood, Goff, Hamilton and Warfield. And then I was hoping that I wasn't going to miss one of these because there are kids behind me. I'm thinking this somebody in this crowd is going to get killed. And I managed to stop things. And I was thankful when everybody said they were loose. So I was walking back to the changing rooms and Chalky said, can I have a ball? And I didn't really see how quick he was. So I stood up to sort of like Gav. I was keeping for Gav when he trundled in with his off spinner's little run up. And he went, smacked me in the glove so hard, faster than Spoons, faster than Goffy. He was scary. And the worst thing was that he wobbled the ball. So whereas Spoons wobbled it a little bit, Goffy was quite nice and didn't do anything. But Chalky, Gav, you give it here and it'd come down here. And I was thinking, I'm glad I ain't a keeper, but Chalky was definitely faster than both Spoons and White on that day.
And establishing yourself at Yorkshire, how tough it was to get into the Yorkshire team was probably harder to get in the Yorkshire team than it was to get in the England team, to be fair, during that time. But when you did get the phone call, and what's that like? When you get a phone call to say you're going to play for England, but going, getting that phone call and how it come about and then getting to the venue of I'm going to actually play cricket for England here.
Yeah, obviously you know what it's like getting the phone call, Stephen, because yep. you've been there. Mine wasn't as smooth as yours. We had a dressing room full of pranksters, of practical jokers, and you talk about Anthony McGrath.
Well, we've had McGrath on the show a couple of weeks ago, so yeah, I tried to describe what McGrath was like, but nobody would believe it.
It's hilarious. There's not a dull moment with him about. We played a semi-final against Surrey live on TV. I was bald-headed, coming down the hill at Headingley. I managed to get Mark Butcher out, Graham Thorpe out, Adam Holyoake out and Ali Brown out. And Sky started talking about me playing. Yeah, thanks. Sky talked about me playing for England. So I kept on getting phone calls from Telegraph and Argos, Radio Lair, Radio Leeds, the Yorkshire Post, all asking the same sort of questions. Fantastic season, Matthew, you've been picking up wickets. Great display against Surrey. And there's talk about you playing for England. Have you ever tried to milk a cat or ride a dog? I made that a bit cleaner than it actually was.
I've heard the verb.
So, Yeah, so you knew that it was the end, Mags taking the mickey, or one of his mates taking the mickey, when they started bursting out laughing. You say, no, I've not tried to milk a cat. But you put the phone down and you think, right, they've got to be a bit more switched on here. Don't fall for Mags's pranks. So when the phone rang at 8:30 in the morning, I picked it up and went, hello, this is David Graveney, the chairman of the England Selectors. I'm pleased to announce that you'll be joining up with the England squad to play the West Indies down at Lord's on Monday. I thought it was Anthony McGrath. So I said, not now, Mags. Put the phone down. 2 seconds later, the phone rings again. Hello, no, this really is David Graveney, the chairman of the England. I said, Mags, not now. I put the phone down for the third time, picked it up. I went, will you do one, please? Put the phone down. 20 minutes later, my wife answers the phone, or my girlfriend at the time, say, has the phone, says, no, it's not Mags. It's somebody called David Gavney on the other end of the phone. So I had to say, I'm really sorry. Really sorry, David. I thought it was Mags, and I tried to tell him the stories of all the pranks with phone calls. He went, I'm not interested, Hoggy. Just make sure that you're down at Lord's 10 o'clock Monday morning. Don't be late. And as you said, once you've digested that you've been asked to join the squad to play for your country, it's what you've been dreaming about, isn't it? It's something that you've aspired to. You've been putting all that hard work. And you say, right, you start, your heart beats out of your chest. You start sweating. You start thinking, yeah, this is absolutely amazing. And like most people, I had a little chip on my other shoulder thinking, well, what happens if I'm not good enough? What happens if I balls it up? What happens if I make a fool of myself live on TV in front of all them people? So you start dropping your shopping a bit as well. Yeah. So I was dropping my shopping, really excited, phoning people up, saying, I've just been selected. And then I thought, Lord, it's a long way from Belden.
How am I going to get?
I'd only been to Lord's once before in my life, and that was Sidebottom, and I got lost. So I thought, do you know what? I need to set off early. So I set off early. I was outside the Lord's gates at 6:30 in the morning. I need to get into Lord's here. But again, all the gates were shut and everything else. But long story short, I managed to get into the changing rooms and sitting in that changing room, the home changing room, not just the away changing room, the home changing rooms with everybody's name up on the honours board of taking a five for scoring 100. It was just an amazing feeling. And we had 13 named in the squad. So they didn't tell us the side. On the Thursday morning, they narrowed it down to 12. Mm. And said, right then, there's a big black cloud just coming over from behind the pavilion.
Exactly.
If that blows away, we're going to play Robert Croft. But if the cloud stays, we're going to play Hoggy. So this is at 9:30, thinking, right then, I want the clouds to stay. Robert's sort of like trying to get the clouds blown away. 10 o'clock comes around, still not told. 10:30 comes around, the toss is just about to be there. Haven't been told. Alex Stewart runs past me, who's the captain, because NASA's broken his fingers. So Alex Stewart was captain for that. And he said, oh, by the way, Hoggy, you're playing. So I'm thinking, wow, I'm playing. I've been nervous all morning. Very quick cap with just David Graveney and Alex Stewart. Quick photo on the edge of the pitch because we were full in whites because we had to go out and bowl. And it was sort of like a whirlwind. I didn't take a wicket in my first innings, but managed to score 12 not out in the first innings. And then I had that perilous wait watching Corky.
You must have batted for about 4 hours to get 12 runs, would you?
I slogged it. I tell you, I think I hit 3/4. I edged out of Thurman, but twice I smacked Curtly Ambrose over Cow Corner.
Yeah, but he was 50 at the time.
No, he was 50, but he still gave me the Curtly stare. And being that cocky little Yorkshireman, I went up and tapped his shoes and looked at him and thinking, he's going to kill me.
Yes.
But I was batting with Goffey, which is, you say Goffey's a brilliant person to be with, and you always take advice off Goffey because he always looks out for you. I went out. My first ball of my test career was against Courtney Walsh. There was one ball left in the over. Darren Goff said to me, Hoggy, he's going to try and get you out, bowled or LBW, get foddered. So I got foddered and the ball whistled past my head. And I looked at Goffey, and he was absolutely peeing himself. And when he went back, well, Courtney Walsh and Goffey sort of like knocked hands together like the freaking pundit.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 as part of the Following On podcast. Steve Harmison in conversation with his former England teammate Matthew Hoggard. Over the next part of the programme, they discuss that series against South Africa and his time in the Rainbow Nation.
I remember playing against South Africa in 99 with the touring side, and Hansie Cronier and Corrie Van Zyl asked me and said, would you fancy going to, because David Boone, who was captain of Durham, said, do you fancy coming to Tasmania in the winter? And then I got an offer, a gentleman's offer from Free State to say, would you be interested in coming to Bloemfontein to play for Free State? And then I got picked for the academy. And 2 or 3 years later, when me and you sort of started playing a lot, I found out you went to Free State. And you know, you were the perfect person to go to Bloemfontein. You are more Free State than the people from Free State. And how did you enjoy that? Because I remember, to sort of elaborate on that, I remember being in Africa in 2004, and there were some big Dutchmen, South Africans, playing cricket in the corridor, talking in Afrikaans, and me and you were sort of having a mess about with them. And they were talking in Afrikaans, and you just went fluent into Afrikaans. And look on their face. It was just priceless.
Living in Bloemfontein, you had to prate a bickie of Afrikaans because Ingles, they didn't pop. So you learn a little bit of the lingo. I think it was the Free State Cheetahs, weren't it? That were the big lumps of lad that were playing in the thing. But I loved it. Absolutely loved my time in the Free State. It's farming state, farms and sport. It suited me down to the ground. They did a lot of braai, so they did a lot of barbecuing in the back garden. They played hard. There was a lot of times to train. And to walk in and your captain's Hansie Cronje, and you're saying, right, then you can sit over in that corner, and you sat next to Alan Donald, and you've got Nicky Boyer in one corner, another corner, you've got Gerhardus Liedenberg. So there was Butter Dip and I in the same side. So it was a fantastic side to actually be part of. And we had an English-speaking coach in Andy Moles, and it was brilliant. But learning to play cricket on the flat Free State wickets with the Kookaburra ball in the heat, you have to learn, you have to adapt, and you have to be on your top of your game because they don't have as many first-class games. And if you're not performing, you've always got the next player coming through. And I loved it. I mean, I can remember playing one day cricket, opening the ball. Well, Alan Donald didn't open the bowling. He came on first. But the chats you used to get at mid-on, mid-off about how to play. And he came and watched one day of a four-day game down at the stand. And it was reverse swinging. And all I could do was get it reversing in. I asked Daddy on the balcony. He was talking to Nico Petorius, the groundsman, who you must probably know. I said, I can only get it going in. And he gave me a very quick demonstration and told me how to get the ball to swing away. The next over, I got the ball to hold up when he got caught first slip. AD celebrated more than anybody else on that ground because he's just enjoyed giving his knowledge out and somebody else getting the wicket. But he just had the same amount of enjoyment for being able to impart his knowledge. He was a legend, is that what?
The reason why I brought that up is because it stood you in good stead. We went back in 2004-05. I remember off the back of the West Indies trip. That West Indies trip was my trip.
That'll do it. Triscothic takes the catch. Harmison becomes the most successful bowler ever at Sabina Park. 12 overs and 3 balls, 8 maidens no less, 7 wickets for 12.
Up the charts.
7 for 12, well bowled.
Yep, thank you very much. Yeah, you weren't bad at it. You didn't do too bad either, getting a hat-trick in Barbados, so we'll pump each other's tyres up on that aspect. But we went to South Africa, and I struggled. I struggled big time mentally. I was struggling from from a health point of view, our, you know, the sort of depression had kicked in big, big time. And we were sort of, as an England side, on the crest of a wave and basically beating everybody that come before us. But we had the Ashes round the corner. And did that time at Free State stand you in good stead of bowling on them services? Because you were a gem in that series. You highlighting and culminating and then finishing off were 7 for 50 odd at Johannesburg?
Yeah, and again, it was quite bizarre because I'd never bowled well at the Bullring in Joburg. I can remember taking a wicket in the first over at where we were in Natal. It was PE, wasn't it? Port Elizabeth after the first test match. Got Graham Smith caught out of slip. And it was sort of like a ball that just didn't swing. I know I'd got into Graham Smith's head, and it came out later when there was the, I think you played in it, the rest of the world versus Australia in test matches. And Graham Smith said, Hoggy is a nightmare because he goes both ways and I can't pick up when he goes out.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, let him into a secret. Neither do I. It's just ball that didn't swing.
Anybody that tells me from a seam bowler's point of view that they can nip the ball back and nip the ball away, it's just nonsense. Put the ball, seam up, and if it goes in, that's brilliant. If it goes out, that's fair enough. Yeah. But at that time, you did have it going round corners. And even that wondrous test, Graham Smith, I know by injury, but he came in later on, didn't he? He came in down here.
Yeah, he smacked his head, didn't he, on the playing whatever it was. He smacked his head on a cool box and came in at 7. And I can remember everybody getting at him when he came. He still scored 50 odd.
He was not out by the end, wasn't he? Yeah. But we couldn't get him out, so we got everybody. You got everybody else.
Well, up goes the finger. England have done it. They've beaten South Africa and go 2-1 up in this series.
That was one of them days for me that everything that I tried or did, they didn't play and miss it. They played and hit it. LBWs could have gone either way. Went my way. And it was, you know, you get the momentum and you get the look of the draw. It all seemed to go my way. And to pick up 7 from, as I said, 12, which is my best bowling stats to help win that game and ultimately win that series because of the rain in Centurion. And to go unbeaten in 2004 and going into the Ashes series unbeaten and having beaten us South Africa away. It just sort of like highlighted the depth of our squad. And unlike when I first went into the England side and we had Goffey and Caddick loggerheads at each other, always wanting to do one better than the other one, getting at the other one if they did better. And I remember walking off the pitch at Lord's when Caddick got a wicket, when Goffey was on 4 for, and said, at least I've stopped you from getting on the board.
Yeah, which is a disgrace.
I'm thinking that is a trick to do. And as people say, what was the success about that team from sort of 2004 to 2005? Our bowlers didn't care. No. It wasn't a fact that you got 7 for, I was jealous, or I got a hat trick, you were jealous. It was a case of, right, we've got 7 wickets, we've got 10 wickets. Get off the pitch. Yeah. We can let our batters try and mess it up. I mean, score some runs. so, yeah, and that was, to me, it was the beauty of that team. There was no friction. There was no animosity about. It was all, it was like a county team, wasn't it? It was just bickering and it's like a family team rather than it was a settled team. Nobody was really fighting for the places. It was all right, then if everybody's fit, this is going to be the team for a while. So we didn't have the weak link in there and we didn't have people bickering, fighting or jealous of each other. And I think that was one of the reasons we were so successful.
Do you think the captain helped? Because you played for Nasser, played for Vaughan, come up with Vaughan through Vaughan with Yorkshire as well. Vaughan had this knack of, you had this golden touch. You had a good set of bowlers, but you had this golden touch of being able to deal with everybody as an individual rather than Nasser just shouting ball and screaming at everybody.
throwing his hat on the floor and kicking the ball.
Would you go as far as to say it was Vaughan having lady luck on his side, or do you buy into the fact that Vaughan was just a very, very good man manager and leader? Because they both worked with Duncan, and Duncan, unless you had a bat in your hand or you had a trigger movement, Duncan didn't want to know you.
or you didn't be far, like Collie, you weren't so far up his you weren't his if you weren't Golden his teacher's child. Pet. Yes, you, as you say, I think Vorney was a very good man manager. He could speak to people in different ways to get the best out of him. And I've heard you describe him as the best liar you know. So I remember first test match, we'll go to the Ashes series in 2005, rolling in the first innings, asking me about my monkeys. How are your monkeys? And I said, well, they're not so good because one of them fell off and got eaten by the alligators the other day. And turned around and ball a ball at Matthew Hay. And he knew that my default setting was to run up too fast and get giddy and just to try harder and harder and harder.
So he knew to talk about imaginary things.
Yeah, and get me out of the situation. I said, you know, I'll get them or ball something. Because he likened me to the shop floor and the cleaner upper. He said, yourself and Freddie were up in the offices and you're doing the sweeping up and the menial work down at the bottom. So if I bowled a bad ball, instead of kicking the turf and dropping his hat on the floor, he'd be saying, Hoggy, get off them stairs, get back down onto that floor. You're not in the offices, you get down onto that floor. So, yeah, he knew how to talk to you. And nothing seemed to rile him. You look at people under pressure, and when you get pressure, their traits come out. All the way through, again, we'll go to 2005 when it was ebbing and flowing and you looked at the leader and your captain to show the way, you couldn't see anything wrong. It didn't fluster. And he had that floppy hat on, his dark glasses, so you couldn't see what it was like. So he might have been absolutely pooping his pants behind the scenes, but he didn't let that show when he was out there. And he didn't let it go to his troops. And I think the fact that he could speak to different people in different ways, and he was great at not letting the emotion or everything else take him away from what he did best, made him a very good leader.
Still to come on the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, Matthew Hoggard looking back at the iconic Ashes series in 2005 and those five test matches that changed English cricket forever.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 and an exclusive interview with the former England bowler Matthew Hoggard. If you missed any of the show or wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, available on Apple Podcasts, Acast and Spotify. But without further ado, he joins Steve Harmison to look back at the iconic Ashes series in 2005. This is the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
In 2005, you mentioned it, you brought it up, so we'll talk about 2005. We had a good, I would say a good bowling display at Lords. We got 20 wickets, but we got beat. Did you feel as though all that hard work that we'd gone through, the Caribbean, New Zealand and West Indies at home, beating South Africa, did you go away thinking, you know what, maybe we're not as good as what we thought we were? Maybe they are really that good?
I'd be lying if I said no, I didn't. And yeah, I mean, I went to Australia. My first tour was in, I think, 2001. I played when when did NASA win the toss and decide that it hadn't rained?
I was on that trip as well.
Yeah, hasn't rained for 5 years, but we'll have a bowl.
Me, you, and Kenny were the only three bowlers because we played nine batsmen and everybody else was injured.
I can remember Craig White coming on to bowl, and we've already discussed that he was the quickest bowler out of the lot of us. Every time he used to come on to bowl, we'd already sort of like bowled the throw-down balls for Matthew Aidan. So he was sort of like seeing it like a beach ball, and he used to track Craig White and smack him over mid-on for six.
I remember that in Lisbon.
And Jockey was, fat track ball. And so I had them memories, and then it was a case of we'd talk a good game. We've just been, I was at 130 runs, 150 runs we lost at Lords. And yeah, I'm like you, I thought we'd bowl really well. We bowled them out for less than 200 in the first innings. So we had a good chance. And we didn't bat very well.
But then you got Hayden at Lords first up. We go, we bat, and I mentioned it before.
We
have this innings where we get 400 in the first day. Vaughan telling us we've got to play basically 2020 cricket to go and just take the Aussies on, which I remember the conversation vaguely, but not as big as what Michael makes out to be now. But and then we're on this crest of a wave. Freddie and KP have got the crowd going, and all of a sudden we've got Hayden first ball, and Hoggy gets a drive. Strousey catches him on the drive. Was that a pre-plan, or is Vaughan right by saying Strousey was late to get on the field? Now you just
again, we always had that short mid off. So it was a plan, but again, I always used to work on the fact that I try and bowl my best ball.
Yeah.
And then the field placement is the batter's fault, and it's the batter's issue. The situation in the game dictates what you're trying to do. If you're trying to dry up the runs or you're trying to get wickets, but I still argue that my best ball is hard to score off, and my best ball is the best ball that I can bowl to get a wicket. Mm. If I run up and it's swinging and I bowl with three slips, two gullies, and I'm an attacking bowler, I'm trying to get wickets. If I run up and try and hit top of the off and it's not swinging, I'm bowling 5-4 now, I'm a defensive bowler.
Yeah.
I haven't done anything, but the field's changed. So to put that man in in Hayden's eye line, it was messing with him rather than messing with me.
Yeah.
So it was a plan. And after the series had finished, I can remember talking to Matthew Hayden, and he went, "Do you know what? That man on the drive just did me."
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know whether to block it, hit it through him, hit it over him, and if he didn't know what to do, that was part of the battle of getting one up on the batters. And yeah, I'd like to say it was my idea, but
we were just doing
it. I just bowled.
Got to land it. We came out. Obviously, we get that win. Country's behind us. Everybody forgets about Old Trafford, so we parked that to one side. It's a boring draw, really. And then we fast forward to the end of of Trent Bridge. I'm thinking 130 to win. We're walking this. We're going to win this.
I wasn't,
especially the way we've gone. And then all of a sudden we're 30 for none. Yes, I might even pack me kit now. We're going to be 2-1 up in the Ashes. And then all of a sudden Warren makes his mark. We're in trouble. We need a boundary hitter, and England send out Matthew Hoggard with his big chase bat. And all I could say is, I know Brett Lee was bowling 90-odd mile an hour. It's a good job he bowled 90 mile an hour, because that extra cover drive will forever be etched in my memory as one of the best shots I have ever seen anybody hit, because it got us over the line.
Good shot. Full toss, meant to be a Yorker. And no one can say that. Poor Hoggard.
I'm glad you saw it. I had my eyes shut. Yeah, as you say, yeah, it was bowling quick. And it was tricky, wasn't it? We had Shane Warne at one end, and I don't like facing leg spin. It gets me out for fun. And we had Brett Lee bowling at 95 mile an hour, and I'd rather purse the 90 mile an hour than the leg spin. But it was a case of, do you know what, we only needed 12. If we stayed in, we'd have edged 12. I knew I had an edge or two in me to get down to that. But I think Brett Lee missed a trick because he was either trying to kill me or bowl me yorkers.
Yeah.
And he just uprooted Freddie's stumps by a lovely length ball.
A ball in, great delivery, wonderful bowling. The stumps are down. Brett Lee has made the breakthrough. He's got the man out that really could win this quickly.
If he'd have bowled that to me, or Simon Jones, he'd have got 4-4 for 4. But he tried to bowl me yorkers, and he kept on getting them wrong. I can remember clipping two off down to final leg.
You get two for that. That's a great over for Matthew Hoggard in England.
Do you know what? It was so much easier out in the middle than it was watching. When I was waiting to bat, I was trying to hide in the physio's room. I was under towels and everything else. I was shaking. I was so nervous. And G. Jones tried to smack Brett Lee, Shane Warne back into Leicester.
Yeah.
And going out onto that pitch, everything slowed down. Everything. It was now just a game of cricket. And it was about you trying to not get killed by Brett Lee. So the crowd noise and everything else sort of like went away. It was now a case of not survival, but a bit of self-preservation, saying, right, then these balls hurt when they hit you. So you don't want to be hit by this. And the runs came then naturally, but because you were in the moment and it was something that you'd trained the brain for, everything else just paled into insignificant, and it was just you and that red thing coming at you. So in that aspect, it was so much easier than what you faced, thinking if Hoggy gets out or Giles gets out, I'm next in. And that to me was the horrible bit.
And I'll back that up, because I'm sitting on a balcony with my pads on, looking at Simon Jones, who's trying to get a pad on because he's got a medical boot. Potentially going to come out and bat in a medical, get his medical boot off and put that back on. And it was, I still say to this day, edge bastard at the end of the game. When I had the ball in my hand, I was fine. When I didn't have the ball in my hand, I was shaking like a leaf. Yeah. So I
there
can understand.
There was one point in that game at Edgbaston that Vaughan looked at me and told me to warm up. I think they needed 10 at the time to warm up. I think I must admit, a bit nipping, but I totally agree. Once you're in the moment, so much easier. And not being in there and knowing what you like, first thought, he's thinking, oh, I've got to warm up now. But yeah, exactly the same as the bat.
Here we go. You got the Oval and a fantastic occasion. I'll never forget that last day at the Oval, even though it was a nipper. And the innings that Kev played, it was, you just couldn't believe what the things that Kevin was doing. Yes, he wasn't born in England. He wasn't of the English mentality of just play through the V and what you were, the coaching manual was brought up. He was a special talent because he thought differently to us. And I remember sitting between lunch and tea time on the last day thinking, what is he doing? He just slugs again for six. Stop doing that. Hit it down the ground. I turned into NASA for about 2 hours.
it was horrendous, wasn't it? And was it the second innings that McGrath was on a hat trick?
Yeah,
it could have been out.
Yeah,
it could have been out first ball.
He could have been out first ball. Yeah,
it hit his shoulder.
Yeah,
and it was a massive.
Everybody went up, and you're thinking, yeah. And that was it. If he gets
and
out,
it looked out. It looked out.
It's game over.
Yeah, and because there was no reviews, if the umpire had made a stinker, then it was game over again. And then, how many times did he get dropped? Taking on Sean Tate and Brett Lee, pucking and put. I'm thinking, how on earth, even if you told me and you said, right, get in any position you want to, and Brett Lee's going to hit you on the head or Sean Tate's going to bowl you a bouncer, to take it, I don't know, how do you take it on?
You close your eyes. You close your eyes, and we'll come to that in a minute, but you close your eyes, swing, and think of England and hope that it goes all in. 25,000 people paid £10 for a ticket on that day to see England, you know, see England win the Ashes for the first time in 20 years. And the atmosphere on the field was just unbelievable.
Oh, it certainly was. And I just say, I know we've spoken about it in the past. The only thing that let that day down a little bit is that the game wasn't called while we're on the pitch.
On the pitch, yeah.
I still don't understand why the Australians came off a bad light in that game.
Yeah.
And they did it time and again. They came off a bad light. And you're thinking, what are you doing? You've got to win this. Oh, well, they were behind the eight ball. It was just a bizarre thing. They had to win that game to regain the Ashes. And they kept on coming off. And you're thinking, that's... doesn't add up.
Yeah, I couldn't understand how why and how they did it. And I agree that the way the end was quite farcical when the umpires told us in the dressing room and we couldn't celebrate the moment. Yeah, we couldn't celebrate the moment not being on the field. So it was tough, but if we didn't get the moment to celebrate on the field, I think we can safely say we certainly celebrated it off it. What's your memories, abiding memories of... the bus trip, if you can remember anything about it, and you know, Trafalgar Square, going around that corner in Trafalgar Square and seeing all them people. Because I'm like, on a bus trip, really? Us lot, you're gonna let Hoggard after 12 hours on a drink with a lot of people, Flintoff, Harmison, no chance you're gonna let that happen. And it did, and you know, we didn't let down, we made sure that we put a good spectacle on, but. Going around that corner for me hit home. I didn't think there'd be anybody turn up. And the amount of people in Trafalgar Square, when we went around that corner on that bus, it was like, wow. It was like a pop concert.
Yeah, it was an amazing one. I mean, we all tell different stories of that day and we've all heard everybody else speak about it. But the truth of the matter is that so many people turned up to watch an England cricket team go around London. Mm-hmm. Now, that stemmed from the hotel. Everywhere we went were people lining the streets. And I can remember at one point yelling at everybody to go home. You've got work to do. Go home. Go do something.
You come out and look at 12 Asbos.
Correct. The matter of fact of how bad we looked and how bad we, I wouldn't say behaved, but it was clear that we were cut. We were half cut. We might still be cut. We'd been on the lash. And we didn't have one bit of bad press.
No, we didn't.
Not one.
We didn't have one bit of bad press.
No, and it wasn't a case of how unprofessional. And everybody had taken us to the hearts and said, you know what? They deserve it.
Yeah.
And I can't see that happening again. And I can't see that happening nowadays. If you went out and got lashed and then went on in public on an open tall bus ride and then got to the Downing Street and everything. We'd have been crucified.
We didn't get any bad press at all, considering. And after we'll tell the whole truth, nothing but the truth here. When we went to 10 Downing Street, paint the picture of no alcohol, so we managed to get some alcohol into 10 Downing Street. And then we're standing outside waiting for the photo opportunity of a lifetime for the Prime Minister, who has just gone into war with America in the Middle East. It's probably the second most powerful man in the world at the time. And we're all standing lined up waiting for this photographer, this photograph to happen. There's about 100 and odd, there's millions of photographers waiting for it. And I've said it along, I love you to bits. You're one of my best mates in the game. But when you've had a drink or when you're in one of your moods, do not go anywhere near Matthew Hoggard. And Tony Blair decided to put his arm around you, look at you glazingly in the eye, then looked at the cameras and asked what we were doing there. Your response was just perfect.
Come on. It was true. It was truthful, wasn't it? And everybody was thinking it at the time. It just took a Yorkshireman to say it. He asked me what we were doing. I said, well, everybody wants a photo. You...
I think you spoke for a hell of a lot of people in the country at that time. And it was brilliant. And to not get any bad press off that was just was phenomenal. But fast forward and we look to carry on. We forged a massive friendship in that group. You mentioned how close we all were. I think we give cricket back to the people of England and the good cricket people, and I think we put the cricket back on the map like what rugby did in 2003, and we went to India, we went to Pakistan after that, and you know, we didn't play as well. And there's one game in India I want to talk about. In the first Test match, it was like it was a carry on film, that build up of that Test series, because Vohni's captain, Simon Jones is there, Trez is there. When we left, Trez and Vohni, Simon Jones play the first fair warm up game. Vohni gets injured. Simon gets injured. Trez takes over the captaincy in Baroda, then goes home halfway through day two. So all of a sudden, Freddie's now in charge. And we've got three debutants, Cook, Anderson, coming in. And we go to Nagpur against a very, very good India side. We're thinking, well, we've got nothing to lose here. You know, even though we were Ashes winners, we've got nothing to lose here. And Hoggard takes 6 foot in the first Test match and gets man of match.
Wasn't it 7 foot?
No, six. I've got it.
Are you sure it's not seven?
Got in front of me, yeah. 30.5 overs, 13 maidens, 6 for 57. Well bowled, Matt.
I don't know. It started reversing as well. It was swinging. And again, it was one of them days where things go your way instead of going against you. I didn't remember any of that build-up. I didn't remember that Vohni was there and then went home, and Fred took over and went home, and Freddie took over. I just thought it was Freddie that was captain. Didn't know anything about it. Shows how much attention I pay. What do you need to know? You need to know that you need to bowl your best ball as many times as you possibly can. Whoever stood on the pitch is irrelevant. They can't do jack until you let go of the ball.
You're a simple man with simple beliefs. And I think when it comes to that, and I love telling this story, and I'll end this conversation with that, because we are best mates. I'll lead into it because of Brisbane. So first over in Brisbane, ready to go. I take the first ball, bowl the first ball to Freddie at second slip. And I looked at the corner of my eye, and all of a sudden you are about the edge of the 30-yard circle with your arms in the air. I think you were celebrating. You're celebrating. Oh. I can see it. And I was like, what's he celebrating for? Did he not see? And it was like, missed the middle. And he was like shouting, you missed the middle bit out. And that was just that was just the way you were. And you started celebrating with arms in the air to warming up.
Yeah, well, there's no way a ball can get to second slip in a Test match from a bowler's hand if it doesn't hit the bat. There's absolutely no way. You cannot get it so wrong that the ball hits second slip. I still don't believe that. It was the following year you broke my thumb.
It was, and that's what I'm leaning into, because of how there's only mates can talk to each other like that, and there's only good friends that can do it and show respect for. And I remember playing against Yorkshire the following summer, and you come out to bat, and you start being your usual nervous.
I'd been called up as well because I didn't play the first bit because I was down at Lord's Test match. So I replaced, was it Brett? I might have been replaced Brezzy or one of the bowlers. I came up and took part in the second half of the game. I came out to bat and you were bowling. And I was quite respectful. And I did ask and say please to the umpire. And I said, excuse me, I can't remember who the umpire was, but I said, excuse me, can I have 2 foot outside the off stump?
And stood which, 2 foot outside off stump.
Yeah. And to which you replied, Hoggy, stop messing about. So yeah. I said, I'm sorry, can I have 4 foot outside the love stump? And then you proceeded to bowl rather sharply. And to be fair, it wasn't bouncers. You didn't try and kill me.
No.
But one of the ball reared off a length and whacked me on the thumb.
I couldn't stop laughing because your reply to the next ball is one of the funniest things I've ever heard in cricket. Because I've bowled this, I'm thinking, right, he's trying to be clever. He took 4 foot outside of stump, and then you took a guard outside leg stump. And I'm thinking, I know he's nervous because at the time I'd been bowling quite quickly. So I thought, I can't hit him. I can't bowl bouncer at him. It's me, mate. It's Hoggy, me and him up in the bowling for 45 consecutive Test matches together. He's my bowling partner. I can't do that. So, all right. So bowl hard into length, and it's just popped off a length, and it's hit you in the glove. To which the next ball, I run up and I thought, if I can hit the stumps, which was very, very difficult for the big fella. I really struggled to hit the stumps and bowl straight. But if I can get this anywhere near the stumps, I'll get Hoggy out because he'll not be anywhere near in nine of them. And this ball, top of off
stump. It's a good ball.
Just missed the top of off stump. And I actually thought I'd bowl you. So I've run away a little bit and I've arms in the air and I've gone, oh, How was that missed? And your reply was, I don't know. I had my eyes closed. It was one of the funniest things I've ever heard for a batsman on a pitch. It was just innocent Hoggard just going, no, no, had my eyes closed. And I just couldn't stop laughing. I couldn't bowl after that. I was like, I don't want to bowl at me, mate. So
I find that all, I hated bowling at people that I knew.
Yeah.
I just something in me didn't like bowling at people that I was friends with. You could put a complete stranger down there, don't give a flying hoot, but put one of your mates down there, I hated it with a passion.
And you came out of England, you came out of Yorkshire, you went to Leicestershire, career finished, Celebrity MasterChef, and what you're doing now is, what you're doing is your love, because looking at me and you now, we look as though we enjoy our food.
We certainly do.
You're enjoying cooking at Hoggy's Grill, and when are we going to see a restaurant, Hoggy's restaurant, open in one of the big cities where you're going to be cooking barbecue food for us?
Yeah, I don't think we'll be having any restaurants in the near future. I'm all about school. I'm all about teaching people how to barbecue properly and to have that love of the outdoor life and saying, during lockdown, everybody's bought into their gardens, into their houses, and upgraded because not allowed to do anything else. So everybody's got a grill in their garden now. Now the hard bit is learning how to cook on them and going away from the normal burgers and chicken and whatever. Is getting out there, making sure that you are best prepared and skillful enough to prepare gorgeous food while enjoying the great outdoors.
Well,
so that's what I'm doing.
If you're, is anywhere I've seen you on, and you are very, very skillful. So if you're anywhere near skillful as what you were with a ball, you will be.
How
very,
about
very,
this for a game of chicken?
Oh, very good. That is very good. Well, if Hoggy's Grill's vision of 2021, fingers crossed, it's a very, very good one. Because you know, I hope, wish you all the best for that that school, because it's something I know. Having been with you a couple of weeks ago, it's something that you're passionate about, you know, the cooking stuff. So, Hoggy, cheers for your time. Thanks much for telling the story. You've been great company, as you always.
Why are you lying now? Always. You told people that if he's
we can stop recording now.
Our thanks to both Steve Harmison and Matthew Hoggart for the last hour. And if you missed any of the show or wish to catch up, you can download the podcast on the following on feed, available on Apple Podcasts, Acast and Spotify. Thanks for listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.